Welcome to a special World Cup edition of Hot Off the Wire. In this episode, Associated Press correspondent Ed Donahue moderates a conversation with John Gamprell, AP Gulf and Iran news director, and James Robson, AP Global soccer correspondent. The episode was recorded just prior to the start of the tournament that kicked off Sunday with Ecuador's victory over host Qatar.
Welcome, everyone, to Twitter Spaces from the Associated Press. I'm AP anchor Ed Donahue. Today, the discussion is on the World Cup. Soccer's biggest event is in Qatar this year, a country that is a strict follower of Muslim laws. There's been criticism of Qatar over the treatment of women and the LGBTQ community. As for the tournament itself, 32 countries are competing for the World Cup. Joining us now to talk about it are AP Gulf and Iran news director John Gamprell and AP Global soccer correspondent James Robson. First, thanks for joining us today. And first, let's go to John. Qatar is a conservative Muslim country. There are questions about how they would handle this big event. And there is an announcement 2 days before the start about the sale of beer at stadiums. I guess with Budweiser, the official beer sponsor, the message might here be no Buds for you. John, what is this all about?
It came as really a surprise, Ed. And this is one of these things you have to keep in mind. The Qataris are largely conservative people. This country is home to some 3 million people, and some 300,000 of them are Qatari citizens. And they follow the same sort of strict Islam that we have in Saudi Arabia, the so-called Wahhabi sect. Now, the reason that they want to move forward and stop the sale of alcohol is because there has been some local criticism of some of the other things that have surrounded the tournament so far. There has been some Qatari anger in regards to some of the more Western provocative shows and things like that that have been going on around the World Cup. And there's been a desire within the Qatari government to show that it's listening to those conservative members of the community, of its citizenship, and of the country. We spoke to people today on the streets of Doha after Friday prayers, and most of the people that we spoke to coming out of the mosque said that they really appreciated the fact that the government was doing this. Now, as you mentioned before, Budweiser is probably not very happy. We're at a luxury hotel today that Budweiser was kitting out into basically to make it a giant themed Budweiser bar, and they were hoping to have sales at all of the stadiums. Those sales aren't going to be going forward. Beers were going to cost about $14 a beer, which is pretty high globally. The hotel that we were at today, where they had the Budweiser bars being set up, it was $15 for a single bottle of beer. Just going to show how expensive beer is going to be here, how much money that Budweiser could have been making, and that's going to be beer that they're not going to be selling.
And it's not really just beer. The culture clash here between conservative views and soccer fans. How has that been playing out so far?
It's interesting to bring it up, Ed, because a lot of people we spoke to today from basically all sorts of different countries, whether Ecuador or local Bangladeshi workers or Egyptians who work here, most people were saying that they thought that the World Cup was going to move forward and basically be kind of within the guardrails of society here. It's not like Dubai. Dubai is a little bit more freewheeling. You do see more nightclubs, more Western-style entertainment and that sort of thing. Here is still pretty, I wouldn't say buttoned up, but much more conservative. There are bars, but they're kind of hidden inside of hotels, far away from view. And there's not really a culture of sort of, more Western-style parties and alcohol drinking and that sort of thing. So while people are still going to be able to, in these luxury boxes, have alcohol and be able to have alcohol at hotel bars and other venues set outside of the stadiums, like the fan zones that FIFA have set up at the stadium, there's just going to be no beers. There will be non-alcoholic beer, though, that will be sold.
And we talked earlier about the country Qatar's treatment of women, LGBT rights. They've also faced criticism around the world of over-treatment of laborers who built the stadiums and the other infrastructure. How is Doha reacting to this?
Qatar, as well as other countries in the Gulf Arab states, really rely on Asian laborers, low-paid Asian laborers, to build the skyscrapers, to build the roadways, and to do the infrastructure work that they need to make these desert metropolises that they have. One thing, as the World Cup was awarded to Qatar back in 2010, there was a lot of attention paid on those low-paid workers. Now, Doha will say that they have made a lot of changes to labor law here, and they have. They have ended the so-called kafala system, which tied people's visa residency to their employment. They've also done other work to try to ensure that people have a base minimum wage, ensure that they get paid, and make sure that they take or allow people who are abused by their employers to bring this up to authorities. However, activists say that there's still a lot more work that needs to be done, and a lot of several groups had done investigations of their own, speaking to workers who said that they were abused even while trying to build the infrastructure and the stadiums around the World Cup. Now, Qatar has really stressed that it has done a lot to support these laborers, and it's, again, like the alcohol issue, it's one of these things that Doha is starting to increasingly push back on against Western criticism, saying that, trying to say that there's all sorts of abuses that happen in the Western world. But then again, this low-paid workforce here is something that you wouldn't see in a city like London when it comes to construction, or a city like New York when it comes to construction. So it's very much a unique aspect of life in the Gulf Arab states, and one that Doha and the rest of the region is going to have to grapple with in the years ahead.
All right. Well, we're talking about all this leading up. Let's get to the pitch and the reason why everyone's there, the World Cup. AP Global Soccer Correspondent James Robson is here, too. James, thanks for joining us. And France won the last World Cup. Who are the favorites this year?
Well, I think the general opinion is that Brazil are the favorites. But I personally feel like it's a very wide open tournament. I wouldn't say with any great authority that one team is the standout favorite. There's, you know, that you would absolutely bank on to win. But Brazil, I think there's generally a feeling around this squad that it's got some emerging young players. It's got the experience as well of players like Casemiro, that this might just be its time to win its first one for, 20 years.
And who do you think has a dark horse, or who do you think might step up that we might not expect?
Well, I suppose as an Englishman, I hope England. And I know that England, of course, got to the semi-final of the last one, and they got to the final of the Euros last year as well. But they go into this tournament in very poor form, with a lot of their key players also out of form or injured. So I don't think expectations are too high for England. And who knows, they might just surprise people, because no one expected them to go as far as they did at the last World Cup when they got to the semi-final. I think a lot of England fans were thinking if they could just get out of the group stages, they'd be happy. And the one thing they have shown under Gareth Southgate is that they are, if you like, a tournament team. They do seem to come together and get it right in the big tournaments, which is something they've not done in the past. But I appreciate that's not really that much of an outsider. But given that I have low expectations, they'll be my outsider.
Hey, you are listening to a live discussion on the World Cup AP Twitter Spaces. I'm Ed Donahue with James Robson joining us. He is our AP Global Soccer Correspondent, as well as John Gambrell, who covers the area around the Gulf and Iran. Getting back to James here, Ronaldo, Messi, the big stars. Who other big names should we look for in the World Cup this year?
You've mentioned the two for me. It does just feel like it's their last throw of the dice to win a World Cup. You know, we are talking about maybe the two greatest players of all time. And the one thing, if you had one thing that you could say that they're just below Pelé, they're just below Maradona, it would be that they've not won a World Cup. Now, of course, that's not the only way of judging things, and you just have to see what they've done for so many years at club level. And they've both won international tournaments now as well. They stand up against anyone who's ever played. But if you were being really picky, you would say, well, you haven't won a World Cup. And this might, I think it's their last throw of the dice, given how old they are. Messi is the one who's coming into it in form. Ronaldo, his career is in crisis at the moment. But you just never write him off. Beyond that, Kylian Mbappe, again, fantastic player. What about Karim Benzema? the star of world football last year. Even at, as a veteran now, he was fantastic. I wouldn't write him off either.
Who do you think has a chance to step up and take advantage of being in the world spotlight?
My big disappointment is the fact that Erling Haaland isn't there. You know, this should have been his tournament. You know, I think he's the right now he's probably the best player in the world, and he's not there. So that seems a little bit strange. Being biased, we've got a player in England called Jude Bellingham, who's a very young midfielder, and I think he could be a real star. I'm hoping that he'll be playing. But again, for France, I really like Camavinga. I don't know how much he'll play, but He's a wonderful player. He doesn't play enough for Real Madrid, but if he does play, he's an absolutely wonderful talent.
And the U.S. opens up against Wales. What are Team USA's chances in this World Cup?
I would say they would be looking at that game as one that they need to get a win from to give them a good standing in this group. It's a very young U.S. squad, isn't it? I was talking to some people involved with them just the other week. It's a very young squad. I would say a concern for them would be Christian Pulisic's form. You know, again, we're talking about players who should have been coming into their prime at this tournament. He is one who I think when he signed for Chelsea from Dortmund, everyone thought this is going to be his chance to become a real world star. He replaced Eden Hazard. So this really was his opportunity. And it just hasn't happened for him at Chelsea. I don't know how much longer he'll last there, because it just isn't working out for whatever reason. So he's not going into it in the greatest of form. Gio Reyna is an exciting player, of course. I think if they're organised, because look, in their group, you've got to say England are the favourites. And it's really, I would think it's between the others. So the winner of that game between USA and Wales, let's just say the loser, they will be worried.
And we were talking about soccer fans from around the world. How is the soccer contingent from Britain? What have they been doing in Qatar so far?
Well, I've actually spent a day wandering around quite a lot in Doha, and I've got to say I haven't really seen many England fans. The loudest fans seem to be Morocco fans. Because obviously I've been looking for England shirts, and I've not seen them yet. If they're not out here yet, I think they'll be pretty disappointed when they hear that ruling on the beer. That will disappoint a lot of people, that's for sure. But you can feel the atmosphere's building, not just for England fans all over the world. And I've seen Messi shirts, and I've seen Ronaldo shirts, and I've seen Zidane shirts. There really is a feeling of people getting into it. You can feel just the excitement building. I was down in a pretty busy hub in Doha just before this call out, and it was pretty lively. Really nice atmosphere, actually.
And getting back to John Gambrell here, John, the World Cup is starting in November. Usually, the World Cup starts in July. Why is it starting in November?
Well, it's really just because of just how hot it gets here. During the summer, you can see heat of up to 45 degrees Celsius. I think that's about 115 degrees Fahrenheit. It's also high humidity and other just really hard conditions to compete in. And Doha has been trying to become sort of a center of sports. It's built a lot of stadiums. They've hosted the Asian Games. They've hosted the Diamond League, which is track and field. They've hosted MotoGP. They even hosted an F1 race here. But the real killer for them is the heat. So this temperature here today, I think it was in the 30s, which is, I believe, and again, my Fahrenheit's a little rusty, upper, like lower 90s Fahrenheit. It was hot in the direct sunlight. You definitely were sweating midday. Now, as the night came in, though, the temperatures do drop off as soon as that sun goes down. Sunset here is normally around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon right now in the fall, and basically having the tournament be in this point in the late fall towards the winter is hopefully going to allow the players to be able to play without getting too overheated, and you know, for the fans to enjoy it as well. Some of these stadiums actually have individual are basically air conditioning inside of the stadium to make sure that fans are comfortable. This was one concern that people had brought up, given sort of climate change and everything else like that, that the Qatar would be using so much energy to kind of cool these stadiums. Qatar's also doing as carbon trading and other means by which to kind of offset this immense amount of energy they're going to use for it. But, you know, again, we're in the Arabian Desert or the Arabian Peninsula. We're in the desert, and it does get hot here in the summer, and that's why we're playing now.
You've lived in the Middle East for quite a while, John. How has Qatar changed over the time you've been there, and why is it such a wealthy country?
It's interesting. Qatar basically in the mid-90s began exporting liquefied natural gas, and LNG, as it's known, has become its real major point in the way that it's been able to raise all these billions of dollars, been able to invest in Al Jazeera, which is the satellite news broadcaster that's famous in the Arab world. It's been able to also see Qatar buy Paris Saint-Germain, Harrods department store in London, and real estate in New York and other places too. They've been able to really leverage this this LNG wealth. And this has really been how they've been able to expand their presence, been able to afford the $200 billion odd dollars that they've needed to do the infrastructure. And you can really see, you know, the last time I was here was, I believe, in 2018 for an OPEC meeting. And you can really see the money that they've put into the infrastructure, the new metro, which was never here, the stadiums that they built, the stadiums that they rehabbed, and a lot of the new high rises and everything here as well. And one thing to keep in mind is that Qatar, over the last couple of years, had actually been facing a boycott by four Arab countries that had really affected its ability to trade and to have its major airlines, Qatar Airways, fly over airspace in the region. That boycott ended about a year ago now when Joe Biden, just before Joe Biden took office. And while relations are still a little dodgy or a little touchy between some of the countries, you do see that there's a lot of people in the United Arab Emirates, for instance, that have applauded Qatar, including Dubai's ruler. So there does seem to be Qatar coming back into the fold and trying to use this World Cup as a springboard to really show that its place in the world has really expanded and that it's really ready to host bigger events potentially in the future. I think they even try to want to host the Olympics too. So it's really been sort of a transformational moment when they started selling that LNG, and they're just trying to build on that and become a major hub for sports in the wider region.
And also, I imagine tourism as well. How have they been trying to attract more tourists, especially, I guess, after, you know, the pandemic?
Yeah, I mentioned Qatar Airways earlier. It's a major east-west airline, and, you know, they follow Dubai has Emirates, Abu Dhabi has Etihad, and, you know, they're basically trying to make themselves a major hub, and by being a hub, they're trying to encourage people who are flying on the airline to come into Doha, to stay at a hotel. They've developed beachfront properties. They've developed a real estate market as well, where they sell villas, homes, townhouses, and apartments.
You are listening to a live discussion from AP Twitter Spaces, Associated Press. We're talking about the World Cup, which is starting in just a few days. I'm AP anchor Ed Donahue, along with global soccer correspondent James Robson, as well as John Gambrell, who is the AP Gulf and Iran news director. Let's get back to James Robson. James, as we were mentioning earlier about Qatar trying to possibly get the Olympics, they've set up kind of an Olympic-style opening ceremony here for the World Cup. What is that all about?
Well, look, this is their opportunity to show the world what they can do. And, you know, why wouldn't you make a big show of this? This is a hugely proud moment for here to have the World Cup. It's the football fans would say it's the biggest show on earth. And therefore, it deserves that sort of a showcase. It's also it's just a great opportunity to show what you're capable of. I think back to the Olympics and when they were in London, and in England they still talk about that opening ceremony, the real moment of pride for the country, which even had the Queen involved in it.
Many of the teams, they're just getting here now, aren't they?
Yes. For them all, really, even countries that are used to the heat, there is a lot of having to get used to the temperatures over here, because even though it's winter, I can tell you it is extremely, extremely hot. Playing football in that, I don't see anyone doing that. Various things like there's a certain amount of indoor training just to keep away from those sort of searing temperatures, but also just working up the levels that they can handle being out in this sort of heat. So when it actually starts for real, they'll be ready.
And prepping up for the for the World Cup, it's got to be difficult because a lot of these teams, the players, don't play with these guys. How much of an effort does it take to get in sync?
Well, these guys should know each other. It is always the issue with international football, and it's the case that you see the superstar for Real Madrid. Why can't he do it when he plays for his nation? And the reason is it's all about relationships. You build up those relationships, and the best teams generally, it might be a case that you've got a whole bank of players who came through at the same sort of period, so they played in the different age groups in international football, or maybe just that they've been together for a long time. So often that the youngest squad, very rare that they'll actually win. It tends to be those more experienced squads who've played with each other for a long time. I think the biggest issue about prepping for this tournament is the time of year. You know, that just last week, most of these guys were playing club football. And then next thing you know, they're on a plane, they're in Doha, and it is the conditions are nothing like they were playing in a week earlier, and they're straight on it. You know, they've not even had the chance to have prep games. You know, usually the tournament is in the summer, so you've got a good couple of weeks at least break between the end of the season and the start of a tournament. For managers to get final warm-ups in, that hasn't happened. So it will be very interesting to see really how all of the teams start, because it really is, you've got to, it's a standing start really, and you've got to be straight on it.
And John, what is it like in the streets as the mood, I guess, as they're preparing for the start of the World Cup?
It's interesting. There are a lot of people here. My colleague that I work with here in Doha, she said that tonight was actually the busiest night that she's seen since she's been here. There were people everywhere, including in Souq Waqif, which is a sort of a traditional souk where they sell falcons, they have restaurants, they have all sorts of things. And along the Corniche, which is sort of this curving road that looks out over the Persian Gulf, and you can see the skyscrapers in Doha, there were tons of people out there. And it wasn't just fans who had come in. There were also laborers who had their day off on Friday, who were basically out enjoying the weather. We spoke to people from Bangladesh. We spoke to Egyptians. There were Tunisian fans that I saw. I spoke to an Ecuadorian fan. We spoke to Mexican fans and a lot of different countries. And there does seem to be a lot of excitement. I think that people are really interested to see what's going to happen. One of the Bangladeshi fans that I spoke to mentioned the fact that actually, this is only the second World Cup that's ever been held in Asia. The one before that, I believe, was in 2002 when Japan and South Korea hosted it. So for a lot of these people, they would have never had an opportunity to see the World Cup. The World Cup would have never come to their part of the world. So they point to that as one of the reasons why they're very excited that it's here and that it's going on now, that they're able to see something and have a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And even these laborers who may not actually get a ticket to a match can still feel like they're a part of the tournament.
And are these stadiums, or is there a significant distance away, or are they relatively close? Or?
I mean, you know, I think that, you know, James might be able to talk better about this one, but I know that like in Russia, for instance, we were having colleagues who were flying, you know, great distances to go to individual matches. I think the same thing happened in Brazil. Here, I mean, most everything is within the metro line and or a short bus trip. So it is a very compact World Cup, and it does allow people to move around pretty easily. And, you know, people, I'm based typically in Dubai, and Dubai has a whole lot of hotel rooms, and they're expecting a lot of people in Dubai to actually just commute for the matches. They're going to have up to over 100 flights a day flying from Dubai, 45 minutes to Doha, putting fans out at the airport. They'll take the metro straight to the straight to the stadium, enjoy the match, and then basically take the metro back and catch a flight home. So there is a lot of transportation, and having it so compact does make it easier for these sort of commuting fans.
As you say, that is the unique part of this World Cup, the fact that it's in this such a compact area. Yeah, usually it will be, it could be in more than one country, it has been in the past. Usually, though, you would be, as a reporter, you'd be set up at one venue where a certain number of teams would play. But yeah, they're all right on top of each other. I think that's the most interesting part about how Qatar will manage to accommodate all the fans. I can tell you from just being on the metro today. Now, I don't know if I was if it was a particularly busy day, if that was unusual or not. But getting on and off the metro, it was pretty hectic. And I was, as it was happening, I was just thinking, I've still not seen that many fans out here yet. So when they're all over here on a match day, getting on and off that train off that metro could be pretty difficult. It was it really was a little bit hair-raising trying to get on and off at certain stations, I'll say that.
All right, James, we're going to put you on the spot here. Who are you picking to win the World Cup?
I'm going to go with the favorites. I'm going to go with Brazil. I think it's their time, but I'm hoping England prove me wrong.
And John, I don't know if you're interested in getting in on this. What do you think?
I am always a little hesitant to make any bets on anything because I always pick the wrong team. But I would say that just historically, the one match that I'm really interested in is the United States in the first round here is going to play against Iran. And I cover Iran for the AP, and there's so much history between these two countries dating back decades. And right now, Iran is also facing these nationwide protests over the death of that 22-year-old woman in September. So it's a really interesting time with sort of the tensions between those two countries. And they're both going to be here in this compact space playing football. So it'll be very interesting to see that match.
All right, great. This has been a great discussion. Thank you very much for joining us. AP Gulf and Iran News Director John Gambrell and AP Global Soccer Correspondent James Robson. This has been AP Twitter Spaces. I'm Ed Donahue. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you for listening.
Audio provided by the Associated Press. Music is by SkillCell and provided through Pixabay. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode.